welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today is July 31st, 2022, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, what do you have for us today?
Well, Aaron, we have a sponsor, Pape Machinery. Thank you for asking.
Sure, Bill, anytime.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, Pape Machinery is our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, and they do everything John Deere. They'll also work on your other brand tractors, but go up and see them.
Those who shall remain nameless.
Those who shall not be mentioned on the air, yes.
I like it.
Uh-huh. And, or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you are.
And there you have it. So, I had to fix my microphone. The sounds of a struggle? Yeah, that was me. Yeah. So today, we're going to talk about marijuana again. A little different vantage point today. Imagine how many vantage points I could find for you. I am filled with vantage points. Yeah, most of them, like, kind of firsthand-ish, which is what makes you angry. Oh, first I should say that the documentary that the folks in Siskiyou County worked on with Day of the Color news folks.
Narcofornia.
So not just in case you're from somewhere else, it's not California, it's Narcofornia. And I think you'll learn a lot, actually. There's quite a bit to take a look at. They didn't use all the footage. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us and you click on the pot tab, there is a YouTube link to that 30-minute documentary on there, as well as pictures, most of the pictures I've taken myself. I got to add the ones from a week ago Friday. I did a flyover up there and got some more sad, amazing pictures of the volume.
Yeah, the magnitude of the grows up there is staggering.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So the chemicals and everything that goes with it, and that's coming to a cannabis dispensary. I was going to say a dope store, but they're all dope stores to me. But it's a cannabis dispensary near you. At probably 80% of what they have comes from the black market, and it has to. Because it's a million times cheaper. So, anyway, if you know people in your community that are selling water to them or delivering soil or all of those things, they are in furtherance of a crime, although growing.
I'd be interested to know how many legal commercial grows are out there that are actually making money selling to dispensaries.
And they have zero connection with the black market?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'd never get that information.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That information is not quantifiable. So people who say they're doing that, well, there's one guy locally. He has two dispensaries and a giant commercial grow, and you know, claims he made $50 million. That's just not possible. I don't think you could sell happiness and make $50 million. Well, you can't buy happiness, so I guess he couldn't sell it. But anyway, it's an issue that you should be kind of getting smart about, because it's being billed as something that doesn't hurt people. It's a great alternative because alcohol is bad, so we've got to smoke pot. Our guest today is Eric Voth, Dr. Eric Voth, by the way, MD. And he's going to decouple for us the wonderful medical side of marijuana that is hyped to everyone, and then the reality. So he is the he's with the International Academy on Science and the Impact of Cannabis, IASIC, and I have the link there. They have just a huge amount of information. We always post on our site the information from our guests, and we leave it all there with the shows. So if you don't have time to listen, if you don't want to send it to people that way, pull the papers that they write, the websites that they offer. There is a lot of information available, and do your own homework. He specialized in internal medicine, pain management, addiction medicine, and drug policy. And so the medical legal expertise is kind of his lane. His position is the counter argument to should marijuana be a medical option. And everybody I was talking to along the way, people you've heard from on this program, on that tab on the website, POT, you'll see all the shows we've done on that topic, too. And so many, many of those guests have said, well, have you interviewed Dr. Voff? I'm like, well, no. So he and I have, we have texted and emailed, and it's been a little bit of a travel, but we've never spoken. So we're happy to have you on, Dr. Voff, and we will go where you take us today.
Well, that's great. You know, this is such a screwed up issue. I mean, I've followed it now literally.
We need to make it, just 1 second. We need to make your voice louder because you are hard to hear.
Let's try that. I was had my phone on speaker. Is that better?
Oh, hey, that's actually really good. You sounded like you were in a tiny little room.
Well, you know, I've been involved, just as a little bit of background, with this whole issue literally for over 40 years now. And my original involvement was actually as a college kid. I smoked a little pot here, and I kept noticing that people had side effects that nobody expected. And then when I got into med school, I started looking for, you know, what I should have done in the first place. What were the real effects of marijuana? And there was just so little out there. And that made me even more concerned that, wait a minute, we got all these millions of people smoking, and we don't even know anything about it. So through the years, I then self-educated on it, and as I began to realize what a heck of a mess we had on our hands, I got deeply involved with several of the organizations and built several organizations to try to bring this to the public, to get it out front of lawmakers and medical experts to really say, we've got a problem. Now, I'll tell you, I'm going to stick mostly to the medical side. I can talk the other side, which is the legalization and all, but the entire focus of the medicalization movement has been to legalize. If you go back, as I way, you know, in the early 90s, late 80s, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws was the real driver at that point for legalization. And they used to have these big conferences that were big, you know, smoke-in, yahoo things. And several of our colleagues would go and either record these conferences or videotape them. And one of the meetings, we are going to use the medical arguments as a way to get the camel's nose, the tent, so that we can legalize. And a big cheer went up in the crowd and all this laughing and carrying on. And they thought, yeah, well, maybe. And as you look back now, every state that has legalized marijuana legalized it for medical uses first. So I'd say they were really pretty successful at what they were doing. And when somebody then tosses millions of dollars into that effort and looks at profiteering, that's where we are today. And what just completely floors me is how regulators, medical experts, FDA, et cetera, have just looked the other way. There's been so much pressure from the marijuana users and from that whole legalization movement that it just makes my head swim to think that they could be so irresponsible and back off so much with legislation and allow this to hit the public.
Well, the other part of it, too, with that, is that the people who are making the decisions, their ideas on marijuana, their information, comes from the 1960s.
And, absolutely.
And so I don't think I know that they don't because I talk to a lot of them. The people that are making decisions in our city councils and our board of supervisors and at the state and federal level, most of them don't use the stuff. And, yeah, they're thinking, well, you know, people use pot recreationally and then, well, they go on and live their lives. And they don't realize we're into a completely different product now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the big problems is that nobody has really sat on the marijuana, well, let's call it the industry, because that's really what it is, to try to get controls of what might be safe, might be recreational. So if you go back to my So like back in the 70s, 80s, et cetera, the marijuana that was on the street was about maybe 2, 3% THC concentrations. The old ditch weed that we had in cans, my God, you know, that stuff, you could about a pound of it and never feel it. As if you look at the DEA reports of potency, steadily, year after year after year, the THC potency continued to rise. And if you look at what's being pushed across the country now, both in dispensaries and in a lot of the legalization and medicalization legislation, leaf marijuana being allowed to at least 30% THC, but the vapes and the oils are being allowed to reach 70, 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example here. If I wrote a prescription for Marinol, which is THC, it's legal medical THC, it would be typically maybe 5 or 10 milligrams. If you looked at 30% leaf marijuana, you took a gram of that, there would be 300 milligrams in that sample. And if I took the oils or the vapes that are 80% THC, a gram of it would have 800 milligrams of THC. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise to me that people are getting psychotic, having these psychiatric outbursts. There's clear evidence now of psychotic episodes, violence episodes, suicide, and we've been tracking a lot of these shootings, and a number of them have been serious marijuana users. Not that that's the only thing, but it's certainly the things that has triggered their violent and psychotic behavior.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because mainstream media has not made that connection. But you're absolutely right.
Well, if they do, the story comes out and says that he was a marijuana user, but then I think it was New York Times on the Uvalde shooter said that he was a marijuana user, and then within a matter of a day, oop, that connection's gone.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, the Uvalde shooter shot his grandmother because she didn't want to let him use marijuana.
Oh.
You know, the Illinois shooter, the recent Illinois shooter, he was all over social media. And one of his handles was stoner. Now, you know, it's very hard to prove, was that the only thing that affected him? Obviously not. But by the same token, it uncorked psychotic behavior. It uncorked violent behavior. You probably remember the story of Chris Kyle.
Oh, yeah.
Well, same thing. He and his colleague took this kid out that had PTSD, thinking, let's go to the range and go shooting. And what happened? The character took pot the night before. He'd been psychotic episodically, went out with Chris Kyle, and shot the kid and killed him. Now, would he have done that if he were in a straight, sober state of mind? Very unlikely. And those kind of stories are just rife, but, you know, What I am absolutely floored about is the press doesn't get all over that. I mean, they should be having a fit, and they aren't.
Yeah, and the same thing goes for so many other shootings. So many of these folks are regular users of marijuana, whether or not they were high at the time, I couldn't tell you, but regular users they just aren't making that connection.
Well, and the other part of that is the overall psychiatric disorder that, you know, that you see not only violence, but psychosis alone, suicides are way up. And, you know, in states that really do a good job of tracking this kind of thing, overdoses are up. Opiate overdoses. So it's all part and parcel of that same behavior being uncorked.
I don't. And how difficult has it been as a medical provider to get people to figure that out?
Well, Let me say, I maybe have done more difficult things in my life, but I'm not sure what they were. I have been to medical conferences. I've written papers. I've presentations, you know, all over the world. And it's funny because a lot of the doctors say today, oh, it's recreational drug. And I think part of it is, you know, to really understand it and to study it. I mean, it takes a commitment. You got to dig into the studies and really pay attention. I think a lot of docs figure, ah, what the heck, it's just pot. You know, I got too much to do. Well, I would also argue, they look closely at their practices. It's rearing its head in unexpected places, especially like with domestic violence or psychiatric disorders, et cetera. So I think that it is very difficult to get the media to pay attention, and we're now just beginning to see more and more studies showing up in the medical literature. I mean, there's a steady flow now of things coming out, particularly about the psychiatric dysfunction, and I'm glad to see, because it seemed like for years, you know, they thought, this is just those, you know, those crazy anti-pot people. Well, there's a lot of good research coming out now.
Yeah, if only we can get people to figure that out. That's why we like to do shows on this on a pretty regular basis. There's so much information, and so much of it is not being shared. We want to make sure people have multiple platforms to hear from folks like you who don't, you know, I mean, you can't cram this into a 1-minute interview. It just can't be done. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Eric Voth. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul.
All right, Dr. Voth, we're back.
Dr. Voth, I read somewhere that you know, early studies on marijuana showed it to be not terribly addictive. Is that true with the high grade stuff they're selling today?
Well, you know, those studies came at the issue in a lot of different ways, and you know, their criteria for addiction, et cetera, was a problem. I can tell you, I ran a chemical dependence unit from 1998 to 1994. And about half of the people that we brought in, addiction, which, you know, is a broad term,
sure,
were either addicted specifically to marijuana or to other drugs along with marijuana. But really, there's no question that especially as the pot has gotten stronger and stronger, more are clearly addicted to it. And there's evidence that if you abruptly stop it, you get withdrawal symptoms, you get the obsessional use. So, yeah, it's definitely addictive. It has become probably more so as it's gotten stronger. And you know, that makes me want to tee off a little bit on the issue of the whole medical cannabis, medical marijuana. You know, first of all, always keep in mind that was a charade. It was a charade to gain legalization. It's been extremely effective. You know, what, 37, I think, states have medical marijuana statutes. But here's the thing. They have not built these in a legitimate framework. You know, medicine... So, you know, what I would do on a daily basis, I have standards of care. And if a patient comes in, I interview them. I figure out what their disorder is. Let's just say it's pain. Try to figure out how that happened. You know, so what were the causes? What has made it better? What makes it worse? And then, you know, really go through a diagnostic evaluation, document in the medical records what medications have been used, what interventions have been tried, are there specific doses or concentrations? And then if I pick a medication, I'll say, now look, you know, you're going to take only this amount, and here's a certain number of milligrams, give you only this many tablets, and here are the warnings and precautions. And there is not any of that required nor done with medical marijuana. It's just not. I mean, that's one of the areas that we are all pushing very hard, is the labeling of cannabis products. You know, put on there, oh, may cause psychosis, may cause violence episodes, may impair driving, can cause suicide, et cetera, et cetera. Just think for a moment, as an example, if some state, gosh, let's pick California, you know, these kind of crazy
We've
things.
Made a lot of bad decisions, yes.
Well, let's just say the legislator decided they're going to make oxycodone available by recommendation. It's legal. Anybody that wants it, we don't care where it comes from. We don't care how it's produced, south of the border, north of the border. You can just have oxycodone, and there's no precautions on it, no warnings on it, no dose guidance. It's just, here you go. Go take oxycodone, and God love you. Well, you know, we never do that. You know, people would look at that and go, you're insane. But that's what we've done with pot.
Yeah, and it's...
And so one of the things that I'm pushing hard is to go back to these statutes and say, wait a minute, let's get them into, if you really want it for medicine, let's put it in a medical framework. But that, I mean, they don't want to do that because they know what will happen.
Yeah, so the other choice is you can go to a collective or whatever you want to call them, and the minimum wage kid behind the counter can tell you all about
the great effects. They can diagnose all your illnesses and
yeah,
give you the right.
You can go in and tell him you have cancer or, you know, whatever, and he'll recommend the right pot for you.
Right.
And like you say, there's no... amount that, you know, there's no guidance or professional or licensed folks that are giving them the correct dosage or anything. You just go in and, oh, yeah, try this. You'll love it.
Well, you know, my home state of Kansas, and I've lived here all my life and practiced here, has not had medical marijuana, and they've been fighting hard, you know, to get it passed through. And their most recent legislation has proposed 21 conditions, as well as, quote, any other chronic medical conditions, end quote, for pot. Now, just ridiculous. I mean, there isn't an ounce, a shred of medical evidence that most of these things have any benefit. And even pain, which is one of those that everybody's assumed, you know, oh, God, marijuana for pain. There are only certain types of pain that it's thought to maybe, not absolutely, but maybe help a little bit. So when you really get down to the science of it, you know, the medical marijuana that really just should vanish.
Yeah.
You can just argue over legalization, you know. You want to put stone drivers on the road? Well, okay, I guess so. You know, and really after the legalization piece. Fortunately, you know, California, Colorado, et cetera, have done that. But the medical side is nonsense, and I think that's something that just ought to be shot down across the country.
Do you, I would imagine you have some pointy conversations with some of your medical colleagues over this and have over the years? Because there are doctors,
you know,
who think it's actually good for you.
And what I usually do is I say, okay, I tell you what, I'm going to send you 50 studies. You read these, study them, don't just, you know, toss them in the trash, 50. And then after you've done that, come back to me and let's talk and see if your opinions change. I just literally had a legislator do that. This guy was PO'd because I was taking, you know, an anti-stance and, oh, you know, you're old time and you're out of touch and all this. I said, I tell you what, let me send you four studies, just four. You read them and then get back with me and tell me what you think. And he, you know, crawled back with his tail between his legs. He says, well, people have should have a right to do whatever they want to do. And I said, well, now, wait a minute. I said, is that true of every other part of medicine? You know, it's and so it's like it's very much like don't confuse me with the facts. And I tell you what, I mean, there is so much, so much data about marijuana. That's why I formed Isaac. The group that formed Order Direct realized, well, you know, doctors were just not educated about it as they needed to be. So we actually formed Isaac to get this information in a format out the docs, more aware, and of course the public's picked up on it and really has been excited about the information we've been able to get out to them. So I am, you know, we do this in a highly legitimate, highly professional, careful manner, so not, you know, seen as a, just a bunch of running around with our hair on fire, which we kind of are, but you know, but the point being, you know, we're really trying to get medical science in front of the public.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling that they can take a Schedule I drug and say it's okay for recreational use.
Yeah, what do we have any Schedule I drugs that are for recreational? Oh, well, I guess if you live in Oregon, heroin and a bunch of stuff.
Heroin, yeah, it that's true.
Because what could go wrong with recreational use of heroin? Everybody knows that's good for you.
Well, and the irony is here. You know, the people that did it the right way, you know, there's drug companies that create dronabinol. They did FDA-formulated studies in THC. They carefully, you know, if you got a prescription for dronabinol, which is Marinol's the trade name.
And what do you do with that? What's it for?
There are all sorts of precautions and warnings and all sorts on it that has somehow managed not to make it into the state legislation. And a legal Schedule III prescribable drug. I've prescribed a little bit of it in my professional time, but there again, they went through the right channels, and guess what? You know, it's pretty hard to use that because it's a 10 milligram pill or 5 milligram pill, not, you know, 800 milligrams like with the vapes, etc.
Right. So it begs the question, is there any other Schedule I drug out there that's approved for recreational use?
Well, by definition, if they're in Schedule I, that's, you know, that's they are not considered medication. So,
okay.
You know, there are some that they're working on, like, you know, for instance, psilocybin. And, you know, if you watch this, just pay attention to the psilocybin stuff. You're going to probably hear the same kind of thing, which will be, you know, these old pot smokers saying, oh, wow, so much, I feel so much better when I take a button of psilocybin. Well, you know, my argument is, hey, if it works, take it through the research. Careful. Exactly.
Right.
What milligram dose helps, because I will tell you, psilocybin can also trigger mania, can trigger psychosis. So it's not one of the things you want to just go out there and start popping psilocybin buttons, even though they've been doing it for years. And some people get away with it and some don't.
Yeah, because isn't that a lot more potent than marijuana?
Well, it is in different ways. It stimulates different kinds of chemicals. It's very similar to very, very, very strong depressant, which is also one of the cautionary notes. You know, there are certain antidepressants that will trigger mania and psychotic episodes. So you got to know what you're dealing with, and you got to know what kind of dose you're dealing with.
Right.
And that's fundamental. I have no objection to psilocybin coming through a legitimate medical process that finds the right purity, et cetera. I think, great, if they can come up with something that really helps, you know, critically depressed people, that's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Having worked with a number of those folks, I will tell you, though, a bunch of them were pot smokers who got so burned out they were more depressed and then ended up using psilocybin to try to blast their way, you know, out of the depression. So it's you know, candidly, it's screwing with brain chemistry by people that shouldn't be messing with the brain chemistry.
Yeah, and that's a lot of this. I mean, let's face it, if you feel like you need to take drugs to solve whatever kind of situation you're having, because a lot of this isn't just, oh, I'm going to use it once and go about my life. That isn't where the problem comes in. It's
right.
It's the recurring use. And, yeah, sure, take a problem that's messing up your life and then throw some chemicals on it.
Yeah. Well, and what you said about dosage, it's very, very difficult to control the dosage on something. Even marijuana, you don't know what the milligrams are before you ingest it or smoke it or however you do it. I would imagine it would be the same with psilocybin. I mean, you basically got a mushroom and you're going to take a bite out of it. You don't know how potent it is. And I don't know how
that's
you would regulate that.
Right. You know, the other piece of the puzzle, and this is something that I really is under my skin, is especially when a lot of the media folks keep talking about, medical marijuana, medical breakthroughs, and these wonderful scientific findings, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, there was a big show on a kid that had this just terrible autism. And illegal marijuana was the only thing that helped. And the mother, you know, hunted around and got in all sorts of trouble and legal trouble. And in the end, it turned out that they were only using about 5 milligram THC marijuana. And that just glazed right through there. Nobody really caught that. It's like, well, wait a minute now. Hold on. You know, you could get that with Marinol. Why didn't somebody recommend that along the way? And anyway, there's just so much behind this that is marketing, you know, trying to push this whole, the whole industry. It's remarkable.
Well, there's just an obscene amount of money in this, right, and especially right now where it's legal, but the regulation is a huge problem because they're utilizing public land to grow it, and that was always a problem because there was federal pushback, but now they're using private property, and so, of course, all the things that we enjoy as benefits of our Constitution, they're using as weapons against us so they can... You know, it's a misdemeanor violation in California to grow more than 6 plants. So if they grow 7 or 7 million, it doesn't matter. It's a misdemeanor.
Well, the one thing that I have been very surprised, not surprised, I've been particularly concerned about, because I'm not a liberal guy, but I do believe in environmental protection, et cetera.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Look at the incredible environmental destruction that's going on in California, Colorado, et cetera, from these grow operations, you know?
Yeah.
My God. Insecticides that nobody even knows the origin of. You know, some god-awful stuff that's from somewhereville in, you know, south something. I mean, it's...
I think you mean somewherevillea in a foreign country. And we banned it, you know, a half a century ago. But... you know, if your agencies are under the thumb of a governor who would have his narrative blown up if illegal... See, because, you know, when you legalize marijuana, the fiction is always that the black market will go away. Well, We all know that, all of us in the real world know that doesn't happen. But if it was to come out that our private property is being destroyed and that the stuff that you're finding in these dispensaries is loaded with banned chemicals, all their magical bus tour goes off the rails. We have to take a really quick break again. Sorry. I kind of forgot. We were having so much fun, and Bill actually looks at a clock periodically, which is so helpful.
Oh, thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, anytime, Bill. So we'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Eric Voth, and we are discussing the medical side of medical marijuana that isn't just as medical as you might think. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Honey, when my skies are gray, no popping the pills, no smoking the thrills that make me feel okay. You go down easy, baby. I could drink you by the case. You're my painkiller.
I've been told you never slow down, you never grow old. I'm tired of screwing up, I'm tired of going down, I'm tired of myself, I'm tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes, honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song, take me as I come, cause I can't stay long.
Let's dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain.
All the coded messages we listened to growing up.
Yeah. Tons of them.
Yeah, tons of them. They only become clear when you're a grown up, so they were programming us even back then. Okay, so where to now, Dr. Voth?
Well, you know, I have hoped many, many times there is a way to roll back all this legislation. I think, you know, realistically, we're probably stuck with it. I would hope that the states that have not passed medical marijuana will be able to stand firm. If states pass it, I hope that they get some really tight controls on it, like maximum 10% THC concentrations. Now, that would not be great, but it would be far better than what we've got. Require documentation of side effects, tracking of adverse events. And that's something that is very puzzling to me, because we do not have the level of tracking that we did at one time in our country for, you know, all of these kinds of things, either criminal slash drug or just drug. I think education is hugely important. People have got to realize that this stuff is toxic, and we're unleashing it more and more and more on the public, and we are going to keep seeing the toxic consequences of that. You know, with these young shooters, good example. So we've got to figure out a way to get tighter controls of what's out there. It worries me, candidly. You know, there's a threshold for these kinds of things where you don't get to go back. And I hope we haven't crossed that, but when you look at what's going on out there, I mean, look at some of the cities that are just devastated, like just Denver, for instance, devastated by drug abuse. You know, whole sections of the city, San Francisco is another good example, that are just nothing but drug abuse.
And Portland.
Society cannot exist beyond a certain threshold of lack of productivity and crime. And I don't know where that is. But I would tell you there are cities that are rapidly approaching it, and pot is square in the middle of that mess.
Well, the medical marijuana thing, I think, was the foot in the door. Once they passed that, it was just a matter of time before they said, "Ah, what the heck? Let's go ahead and just make it recreational." That's the one they got to stop. They got to stop that medical marijuana. Otherwise, it will be just a matter of time.
Recreational, I mean, like in California, right? They started with medical, then they moved to recreational. Medical's a fiction.
Yeah,
nobody needs to get any kind of medical.
There's no prescription for marijuana nowadays.
Yeah.
You don't need it.
Well, absolutely. And the problem is now we've got, 37 states that have medical marijuana statutes. And as we've tried to go back and get them to tighten up, you know, they look at you like you got three horns in your head. It's like, well, we can't do that. Well, why not? You know, why can't you put tighter concentration requirements on it, et cetera, et cetera? And so I'm very pessimistic about our ability to shake this off, but if we can get more people to push and say, well, yeah, we don't want it to destroy our state. We don't want to lose our kids to it. We don't want, you know, so many traffic and accidents and overdoses and, you know, psychotic episodes. Maybe legislators will listen, I hope.
Do you think there's a lot of them are still living under the delusion that this is somehow going to put millions and millions of dollars, tax dollars, into their coffers by legalizing it? Because, I mean, it's been proven that just it doesn't happen.
Absolutely, they're living under that. Kansas, right now, that's one of the, you know, they're trying to blow up our skirts. Oh, there's all this money out there. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the social costs here, just that alone, you know, it does not pay for itself. I mean, Colorado, for instance, has long said, you know what, it covers maybe like a tiny percentage of their overall budget there. It does not pay for itself. And then you have all the social harms that have to be dealt with.
Well, that's the biggie. I mean, they might bring in a few million dollars into the coffers, but look at what it's really costing in social damage with hospitalization, addiction. I mean, all kinds of bad stuff.
Yep, absolutely. If it were simply addiction, you know, you could go at it perhaps trying to work on lower doses, et cetera, but it's so much more broad than that.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you looked at every episode of either psychosis, violence, suicide, overdoses in California, I would hazard a guess that 90% or more had somewhere in there marijuana was involved. Maybe not as the final cause, but certainly somewhere along the line.
Yeah, it was a contributing factor. There's no doubt about it.
Well, we did a program.
Yeah, we did a show on that.
I think it was on the 5th of June, and listed all the different connections, all the way back to the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like one after the other, after the other, after the other. And you start looking at that, and then you go, well, do we have a mental health crisis in this country? Because that's what this is. You know, I mean, well, we need to get rid of all the guns, and then no one will kill anyone. Well, you can still kill more people with hammers, so I guess we got to get rid of them, too. But then we move to mental health, and we skip the drugs.
I try to be a reasonably centrist person as much as possible, but there are some areas, like, for instance, I've never a gun jump off of a desk and shoot someone.
Exactly.
I've never seen it itself. I've never seen it purchase itself. I've never seen it get in its car and go drive somewhere and then start shooting at people. You know, you got to do something about the shooter.
Yeah. Well, and you have, again, you know, hammers kill people all the time, and yet every construction worker has several, and most of us have several in our garage, which is probably why people use them as a weapon.
It's such a simplistic argument. You know, when you look
silly.
At, like, for instance, Europe, where they have very tight gun control, wasn't it Sweden or one of the Scandinavian islands had 80 people killed by a single person? And nobody had a gun to defend themselves. And, you know, this guy went around and hacked them up and hit them with axes and knives. And, you know, places where people are driving over folks with cars. It's the individual that's the problem.
Killing is killing, and if you're going to kill somebody, you'll find a way to do it. But then when we talk about the mental illness, the thing that frustrates me is then even if you can get through that morass, you move into mental illness, and then it's, well, they're probably being bullied. Well, there's probably this. Well, they're wrong pronouns. Well, they probably wanted to be a girl. We go through that whole thing, and the connection to drug use is completely overlooked. I've never actually heard it discussed.
Well, and that's something that is so absolutely fundamental that they've got to get a grip on is if people are psychotic, maybe they have been pressured or this or that or this or that, but are they smoking pot? And if they're using pot, are they vaping 80%? Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's toxic. It doesn't surprise me if they are. So, you know, I think if somebody would look, and I think they're afraid to look, but I think if somebody would look, I would venture that you could tie marijuana or a form of THC to just darn near every kind of violence, psychosis, et cetera, that's going on in the country. And that's a big, I'm taking a big step there, but I bet you that we could prove that.
I wouldn't doubt that. Difficult. Same, too, with the increase in childhood cancer. Dr. Stuart Rees, there Australia,
right.
He's got a ton of information on the carcinogens, on the damage to the chromosomes. It was funny, I was talking with our engineer before we got started, and I said, you know, I'm one of those people, I try to make my decisions based on facts, so I use the show a lot. Let's bring people on and let's find out what's really going on. The more we have learned about this, I cannot think of anything I would consider a benefit to the entirety of the marijuana. Even the hemp and CBD, to my amazement, causes cancer.
Well, you know, I would urge strongly that folks that are listening, get on our website and study the stuff. Real easy to get to. It's all lowercase. Isaac, IASIC, one, the number one, .org. And we've got study after study after documenting this. We have our medical experts giving presentations on it. there's a lot of data there that needs to get out into the hands of the public. And this is a slick, easy way to do it.
I would like to hear more, maybe when we come back after the break, more about the founding of Isaac and the people that are part of it and kind of what's happening with the coalition of, I know there's a really strong network around the country of people who are pushing back on this, because there are a lot of people out there that are just regular folks living their life. They're not medical people. They don't have any specific expertise. But they would really like to help, and they'd really like to keep this out of their communities. And I hear this a lot. You know, the city council wants to put in a marijuana dispensary, and we don't know what to say. I'd love to get your thoughts and maybe some suggestions on how they can do that and where you've seen that be successful and, you know, where you've seen it sort of, you know, implode too.
Sure.
And maybe a little bit more about your medical practice and what you've seen from your patients, because I think that's like good firsthand info. So let's see. All right, we're doing this new form of communication with Liam behind the two panes of glass that I can't see very well. I think we have to take our break. Oh, here we go now. Sorry. Our clocks are always different. All right. Our guest is Dr. Eric Voth. And you've got that little peek in the window there of We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What a drag it is getting old. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something today to calm her down. And though she's not really ill, there's a little yellow pill. She goes running for the shelter of her mother's little helper. And it comes...
second hour of We the People Radio on July 31st, 2022, in case we replay this. It's a timeless topic. We're talking about marijuana again. And we're going to help everybody understand that the medical option isn't really that medical, and it isn't really a good option. So that's a little spoiler alert at the top of the hour here. And I do hope that you will go to the archives that stretch back for years and years and years and years, like 12 or something, and tap into some of those older shows. A lot of those topics are still super useful, and many of them are way before their time. We were covering the transgender issue back in 2016, go figure. So maybe it's our fault this is happening, actually. I never thought about that.
Uh-huh.
I always thought maybe we were just sort of ahead, but I don't know. Maybe we should be blamed. So what do you have for us, Bill, as far as sponsorship?
Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They have everything up there, John Deere, you name it. They have it, tractors, mowers, implements, parts service. They do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, Shasta Lake, and right in between the Oasis and Pine Grove exits. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226, and they'll get you fixed up with brand new John Deere equipment. And or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you go.
There you have it. Okay. Back to our guest, Dr. Eric Voth. He's from Kansas. Kind of fun. We haven't talked to anybody from Kansas, I don't think.
We haven't had Dorothy on
a long time. If we did, they didn't admit it.
I'll click my heels a few times. And
please do.
Happens, so.
Yeah.
You know, I wish you would, because we're starting with fires again. And just for the folks out in your neck of the woods, fires are not a natural disaster. The fires in the West are caused by bad forest management. They are avoidable. They're not like tornadoes where you are. They're not like hurricanes. They're not like floods. They're not like any of those things. They are something that policy could fix. And
the vast majority. Every once in a while we'll have a lightning fire.
I mean, I'm not saying the causes are caused by policy, but the fact that they become what you see on the news, which, you know, looks like
mega fires.
Looks like Armageddon. And we just burned down 270 structures yesterday up north of us towards the Oregon line. I don't know how many have been lost today, but the fire doubled overnight. And tons of people affected and probably won't be able to rebuild. That'll never be a FEMA disaster because they won't reach the loss limit that FEMA steps in. And so these people, if they were able to keep their homeowners insurance, a lot of them are being canceled that live in rural areas. If they have insurance, they will be kind of on their own with that. So anyway, just a bit out there here at the end of July as the whole fire mess begins. Remember, it's not a natural disaster. It's a policy problem.
It is a season, though. Yeah, we now...
Unfortunately, yes, it is a season.
Now we have a fire season.
Yeah, boo.
So, yeah.
All right, back to Kansas. Back to Kansas and marijuana. Oh, and the bad part is all the big marijuana that you saw in Narcofornia is up there in the county that I'm discussing, and unfortunately, it's not anywhere near the marijuana at this point. Boo.
Yeah.
Darn.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Another...
Yeah.
another bad little piece of bad news. So back to Isaac and kind of how you guys got started and why, and I'm curious about that. You're very well known. It's very reputable.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks out there that have stories and want to be more involved. Maybe this is an outlet for them.
The concept for Isaac really came to be about 2 years ago. All of us, and the five of us that were directors that really started the organization, have been involved, you know, for years in different organizations, professional groups, and individually, et cetera. And we kind of put our heads together and said, you know, what really is missing? I'm going to cough here just a second. I was just getting over COVID, but...
I forgot about that. You tried to go on vacation. I'm going on vacation. Boom, I have COVID. Perfect.
Boy, perfect timing.
Mm-hmm.
Several of us put our heads together and said, you know what really was missing is an authoritative group that doesn't speak up and speak out on cannabis. And wanted to come at it, you know, purely as scientists, as physicians, and get information out there and just say, look, you know, this is not us making it up. This is what the science shows us. And we all had individuals that we professionally or personally had contact with internationally, and we started tapping those contacts, put together quite a professional group of physicians or PhDs or policy experts, and really initially started the organization more to educate physicians, because, you know, really felt there was no non-political group that really could get the marijuana information out there. And since doing that, you know, there have been probably the most surprising thing is the number of parent groups or individuals that say, oh my God, I never knew this. Can I get more information? So we have done a lot of educational stuff, and we put most of the things that we have either put, you know, stood for.
We're losing you there.
Fine.
There we go. We were losing you signal-wise. Something was...
Okay.
Something funky was going on.
Well, sometimes the signal does get a little harried here, but anyway, so we put this together. Our website is very easy to navigate, and if there are things that people are interested in particularly, we'd be happy to try things out there, but we have a library website, and it's pretty self-explanatory with subject areas, et cetera.
Well, I think that's just really helpful. Give me some idea, or for folks who haven't been on the site, we should give the site out again. It's IASIC.
One, then the number one. ISIC1.org.
.org. There it is. I have it on the site, but I had it as a link. I will go back in and I'll actually print that out on there for people. Who else is participating in that? Like, what other disciplines do you guys have?
Well, it's pretty broad. I mean, for instance, on our board, we have one physician that is actually a pathologist, an emergency physician, psychiatrist that also ran an addiction treatment unit, and then one of the country's top pain experts is our board also. And, you know, our affiliates, gosh, I mean, we've just got a lot of my favorites. They're coming and going there, but about 40 different folks, so all over the U.S. and Europe, et cetera. So.
That's fantastic. Talk to me about the pain thing, now that you've mentioned that, because that's one I hear a lot. Oh, I have such problems with pain, and I can't take pain medication, and marijuana really helps. That's the narrative.
Well, it's interesting that a fairly low percentage of those people that go to receive marijuana for pain actually use it for their pain. A pretty high percentage use it for intoxication and recreational uses. So that's the other part of it is, and this is now coming from, you know, sort of like big national reviews and series, that it really is pretty marginal. In fact, the most recent review on that suggests that maybe there is some benefit for pain, but even that is sketchy. And all these other, you know, things that get tossed out there there's not science behind them. And I would say, you know, somebody might believe that they are getting benefit from their whatever issue, but that's not the same as a series of scientific, controlled, blinded study. You know, and if a person turned out of their gourd, well, maybe they feel better, but that doesn't mean that the pain or the that they're saying they're treating is better.
Yeah.
It's So that's a fundamental issue that I bring up when I'm particularly testifying to state legislatures, et cetera.
Yeah, it's no different than people that turn to alcohol for pain relief. I mean, yeah, they get
emotional support.
Yeah, they get mentally affected by the alcohol, but it doesn't mean that the pain is gone.
Right, right. And of course, if they're using it recreationally, there's going to be that tendency, you know, to want to try to validate it and justify it and rationalize it. Oh, it makes my anxiety so much better. Well, you know, being stoned out of your mind, maybe, but, you know, is it really helping the underlying condition? And the other piece that is tricky, and it's very tough to get science on it, is what are the side effects that are making other things worse? Good example. Somebody takes it for pain, but they get more depressed. You know, they keep taking it for pain, they get suicidal. And you'll hear, oh, they had so much pain, they killed themselves. Well, maybe. But maybe the marijuana was making their depression worse, which definitely happens. So it's very tricky that way. And I think, and I know it sounds a little broad brush, but I would say right now, there is no evidence that marijuana is the know-all, end-all for any single medical disorder. And I know that some people say I'm full of it, but I'm telling you, from what I've seen, there is no evidence that marijuana is the final authority, the best of the best, the only thing that will help sort of everything you throw it at. Doesn't happen.
It was interesting because when we had a few discussions with Dr. Stuart Reese about, you know, cancer and all of that, because I've seen where a lot of the illegal growing is done and how it's done, I don't know, when he was talking about all the cancer and all that stuff, I thought, well, I mean, I'm sure, because you look at all the chemicals that are on this stuff. And so we asked him, well, what about somebody who, because this is, I hear this all the time too, I don't get it from a dispensary. I know exactly how it's grown because I grow it organically in my backyard or whatever. I grow like two plants or something. And so we asked him, what about that? Or what if you grew it in a lab? Like, what if you're a scientist, you grew it in a lab and it had no chemical interactions except for the plant? And he talked to us like we were mentally slow, and he said, if it comes from the cannabis plant, it causes cancer. At which point, you know, later in the show, I kind of forgot that, and then I was like, well, what about CBD and hemp? If it comes from the cannabis plant, it causes cancer. And so I thought, okay, then you add all the chemical composition that's in these products in the dispensaries, and people have no idea. They say that they're regulated, but I mean, in California, well, they've proven it's not. So
that's an area that the legislatures really have a responsibility. If they're going to allow this stuff, you know, they need to require a detailed analysis of what is in it. I mean, there's heavy metals that have been identified when you start talking about, you know, cancer, et cetera.
Well, one of the guys we spoke to said they grew a bunch of it near Chernobyl to pull the heavy metals out of the ground.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, because apparently it's a property of the plant. It will draw the heavy metals out of the ground. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not a scientist, but I'm thinking I know where the heavy metals go.
Well, they need to put. You know, I agree. They need to put testing in place, but the testing needs to take place prior to putting it in the dispensaries.
Yeah, right
now, they're going to the dispensaries, taking samples and saying, oh, this doesn't comply. You have X amount of days to clean it up. Well, that should be done before they put it in there, not after they've been selling it to whoever walks in the door. I mean, they're just selling poison.
Yeah, that's just cool.
Well, and the other piece of that puzzle is the public really has a right to know you know, what are they getting? Are they getting 5% THC? Are they getting, you know, 80% THC? That needs to definitely be analyzed, because then people can say, whoa, this stuff's going to cause more psychosis, or, well, I better be really careful with this dose.
Well, Ann Hassel told us, we have her, you know, documentary Smokescreen posted on the site, and she had told us in an interview that if it's under 80% THC, nobody wants it. The dispensaries can't sell it. So the higher it is, no pun intended, the more popular it is. And that seems, there doesn't seem to be any, there's no interest in, let's make sure that this is moderate. I hate to say it, but yeah, we have to take a break again. But when we come back, maybe, I was looking at your bio again, and the one thing we really didn't get into as much is you have 20 years of studying the effects of drugs and addiction, and people constantly say that this is not addictive. I know you've talked about that a little, but in the map of drugs and addiction, once we legalize this, I think I kind of know the answer, but where does this go from your vantage point as a physician? We'll be right back. Sure. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you played before. California's a brand new game.
Oh, and there we were all in one place, a generation lost in space, with no time left to start. Clenched in fists of rage, no angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climbed high and...
Just to be clear, the gold in California that's in that bank in Beverly Hills in somebody else's name, the name it's in is the member of some sort of Mexican cartel. I'm just here to spoiler alert you. It's not your neighbor. Terribly unfortunate. But, yeah, the criminal world has really made a heyday out of our inability to follow science and listen to people like Dr. Voth.
Well, you know, getting back to the
drugs,
the,
and addiction.
Yeah, well, the illegal substances that are used to grow marijuana. When you go to the grocery store, they actually have a section for certified organic. So it can be done. At least if you believe it's certified organic. But they do have organic, because there's people out there and kids out there that are sensitive to certain chemicals that are put on our food. There's no reason why they can't implement something like that for marijuana at this point, to make sure that what they're selling doesn't have all these heavy metals and pesticides and all this other stuff in it. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, that's absolutely true. And the problem is you've got to have enough community will that it happened to push it and get the legislature behind it and say, yeah, but what if it cuts back on our profits? You know, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a circular phenomenon there. And yes, absolutely. Pot that's being sold out there, we ought to know exactly how much THC, all the other garbage in there, what are all the other byproducts done by certified professional laboratories, not just, oh, my buddy Bob, who decides that there's, it's ridiculous. And it's incredible that there is so regulation. I mean, that's the part that I absolutely baffled by.
Yeah, it's totally doable. I mean, for crying out loud, you as a farmer, if you grow sugar beets, those sugar beets are
all over you.
Yeah,
100% of the time.
And they're tested. They're tested for chemicals. They're tested for sugar content and all this other stuff before they ever get to the processor. And so there's no reason why. Okay, you wanna grow marijuana, then these are the rules that before it leaves the field, it needs to be certified.
Well, that's why right. They say we have to take it off Schedule 1 and totally legalize it and blah de blah de blah. But we've seen, I know the California effect better than the other states, and it did happen in other states though. You know, they legalized it and the black market just absolutely took off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a veritable gold rush out here. So when you have people out there, is there any statistic on how many people have an addiction problem, whether they exercise it or not, but how many, I mean, I think we all are addicted to different things, whether it's TV or drugs or, you know, small schnauzers or whatever it is.
It's hard. You know, there are studies that are done on that, and I always felt marijuana studies were just fantasy, and you know, because who's really, really doing the research on, okay, what is problematic use, what is clear addictive use, and a lot of that data has to come from institutions, and you know, I'm underimpressed by what institutions are doing. I mean, I had psych units that I worked around, and they weren't tracked that stuff. Because they were concerned that somebody'd get hold of illegality of it, and then the clients would have problems. So it's a wild west right now, and I think that's one thing that could really stand to be tightened up a lot. It used to be not too bad in the early 2000s, but along, you know, midwest, so that tracking went away. And yes, we need to know who's using, what's happening. Have they gone to treatment? Have they required treatment? Have they been in jail? I mean, that's part and parcel of this stuff. But there was a lot of pushback from the marijuana industry and individuals saying, well, you know, it gives this criminalization view, and a lot of it just went away.
Well, the thing is, you have people who have problems with things. Now, you know, you always get the alcohol thing. Well, there are tons of alcoholics and there are liquor stores everywhere and they've got it in grocery stores and all that. Well, I don't think that's helpful for people to be faced with it all the time. But I don't think putting marijuana stores in everybody's town is helping with the addiction either.
Well, you know, the whole alcohol argument, God, I've fought that so many times. And it's just, first of all, a completely different drug. And there is absolutely no beverage use of marijuana. You don't smoke pot because you love that burning smell and terrible heat that's going up through your respiratory system. You know, alcohol, you can have a glass of wine, alcoholic, drive, you're not going to get a DUI. People have trouble with alcohol. And I'd be the first to say, holy cow, alcoholism is a serious problem. But it's a totally different drug, and so it's kind of nonsense. The real issue is with marijuana, at what point is a person becoming dependent? It's very long-acting stuff.
That's the thing. It stays in the system for such a long time.
Yeah, and by Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, it's pretty much out of your system. You know, not true with alcohol. You know, it's an ounce an hour rather than, you know, a week with a single. But I think the other part is it seems like marijuana smoking individuals are far more tolerant of being, quote, blown away than, you know, recreation alcohol users. And I can't say that across the board, and I certainly don't have statistics to prove, but of the people that I've dealt with, you know, it seems like a lot of the pot users are just willing to be stoned on their out of their minds, you know.
Well, and you can vape this super, super high potency THC, And it leaves no trace. You don't, it isn't like the, it, you know, the olden days, you know, the salesman who went out for lunch and came back and his eyes were all red and smells like beer. You could see it at work, but here you have kids vaping this stuff during school.
Well, that has been a serious problem, and, you know, trying to get it identified and out of schools or off the streets is tough. You know, you're telling law enforcement, well, you got to go after this, and, oh, by the way, catch the bank robber, too. It's like, ah, it's just marijuana. Well, wait a minute. It's not just marijuana. So, yeah, that's tricky. And you mentioned, you know, be gone. I actually been involved in this whole marijuana world for literally 40 years. And I opened up a chemical dependence unit in 1984 and personally ran that unit, admitted all the patients. There were about 4,000 to 5,000 patients in that time frame. So I had a very, very, you know, face-to-face view with addiction, and pot was a big part of it. That takes us to 1994, before all the vapes and all that stuff really started hitting the market. And you could just see a ramp up in all the social consequences. And it was literally ignored by, you know, policymakers, et cetera, because, oh, it's just pot. And they had been sold a bill of goods by the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the real kicker. So if somebody came at you with a really hard argument, I always think, like, when people listen to our show, I like them to walk away with, like, good arguments that they can make themselves, you know, just that regular people could make. So if you have somebody who says, hey, you know, I don't think we should have, you know, all these dispensaries in our town, and they want to go make, and the argument is, well, we have liquor stores everywhere.
Two different drugs. And what's more, the alcohol is very tight related. So one of the most important things is get serious regulation going. You know, prove what's going on. What criminal action is taking place, if any? What are they actually selling? That's one of the things, you know, bring that to the public. Public disclosure is a pretty powerful formula, except in certain parts of the country where everybody's smoking pot. So it's, you know, it might work in Kansas, but Northern California, they just shake their head and say, yeah, just go get stoned, you know.
No, you're right. If you're in an area where there's high marijuana use, there's very little appetite to go after illegal grows, and, you know, that's, you know, unless the public is really made aware of some of the damage that's being done, you know, physically, economically, environmentally, they're going to act like, well, it doesn't affect me. It's nothing I need to worry about. It. If they want to do that, that's their business.
Yeah, they think they're not going to pay for it. And yeah, I mean,
I hope
people do watch that Narcofornia, because when you see that, you realize there's no way that a small rural community is going to clean up that ground. It's not possible.
No, poisoned it.
I mean, you're looking at Superfund level cleanup at some point. And so they think, well, maybe I don't care about that because I don't live anywhere near there. Well, guess what? That's where all your food is grown. That's where your beef comes.
Gets into the water supply. I mean, it has.
It's affecting everybody.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're exporting it to a town near you. So just in case you thought Kansas was safe.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, the industry has put out so much garbage about, you know, how wonderful it is, and there's all this profit, and, you know, people are finding themselves, and it's just so great. And, you know, nobody has countered that. Nobody has really fought back and said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And what about psych episodes? What about violence? What about addiction? And I'll tell you what, there was a time, if you look at my vitae, I mean, I was called by CBS, NBC, ABC, every radio station you can imagine. And it's difficult today for me to get picked up by any kind of major media because they've all been sold this bill of goods that pot's okay, don't rock the boat. You know, our local newspaper, my God, it was wonderful. All I had to do was send an email and there was an article. Well, they got bought out, but it does.
Yeah.
And it's been impossible to create that paper and to get reasonable scientific stuff out. And I think that may be the single greatest problem that we're facing is control of big chunks of the media by the pot lobby.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you have to remember, too, that these grows generate billions with a B in dollars. That money, when it goes to your local tractor supply, and that's their biggest customer, they're welcoming that business. When that money goes to, let's say your local Board of Supervisors candidate for a donation, they welcome that money because it's going to help them get reelected.
And it's a legal business.
And it's
I
love
that one.
Oh, yeah,
that's
love
my
that.
Favorite.
Yeah,
it's a
legal business.
Business.
They can do that. But that money is showing up. I mean, where I work, people come in all the time with handfuls of cash and buy products. They drive Bentleys. And I'm talking 25-year-old kids driving a Bentley. I'm sorry, when I was 25, I had an old beat-up pickup truck, and I was happy if it got me back and forth to work. There is so much money being generated by that. That's where the loss of appetite is to go after this business, because all they do is they start greasing palms, and everything just goes away.
It's interesting. Our the House of Representatives is doing a contest with on the Republican side. They're having kind of like an inside contest to get things out into the media, so they're pulling different topics. And so our local congressman, Doug LaMalfa, here in the 1st District of California, has 11 counties, and they're all being hard hit with this. And the state won't enforce unless they've agreed to do commercial grow and all that, and he's adamantly opposed to it. So the trick with all of his communications is how to work marijuana into the topic. to make that part of the educational stream. And so because and we're going to have people do that. That's the only way we're going to be able to get the message over the bar and get folks like you back in the driver's seat to give them fact. We have to take a really quick break again. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Eric Voth. We have had our time fly by. You can find this interview posted commercial free later this afternoon at wethepeopleradio.us.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
I think we need to call on some angels to help us with this.
It is going to require some sort of intervention. a major intervention. So, Dr. Voss, what have we not covered? What do people need to know, and what would help them push back locally as this overtakes their community?
Well, the main thing is to self-educate. You know, a lot of people have a sense marijuana is a problem. Okay, fine. But can you carry on a good argument or a good conversation with a legislator or somebody that's pro-pop? And if you can, you know, people to hit the website here and go to our library, I think there's, 25 or 30 different subjects that they can take, that they can look at and become informed, you know. And that way, when talking to a legislator and they go, oh, you know, that's nonsense, as they always do, you know, you say, no, wait a minute. There's this, this, and this study that is clear that it has this impact. And all of a sudden, people start to wake up and they go, gee whiz, you know, maybe I need to listen to this person. So educate, inform themselves, don't put your head in the sand, don't quit. Because once you quit, you've lost the battle. And it may feel like you're losing the battle, and you may be losing, but you just can't. I mean, I'm living proof of that. I literally now, I'm 40 years into this thing, and, you know, it feels like a chunk of the time I'm on the losing end. But every once in a while, a real great breakthrough happens, and you go, well, now, you know, if I'd quit 10 years ago, where would we be? And if we have dozens, hundreds of people that are really starting to, you know, pick the banner, you know, we may turn some of this around, and we have many more than we did 5 or 10 years ago.
Well, we have a lot of information we didn't have 5 or 10 years ago. I have yet
Absolutely.
To speak with anyone regarding the chromosomal damage that Dr. Reese speaks about. I've never spoken with anyone who said, oh, yeah, I've heard about that. No one. Not one person.
Yeah. Right. And there is huge amount of and research out there. And if you have access to really good Internet, another to search is on PubMed, P as in Paul, U, B, boy, E-D. And that is sort of the big clearinghouse, all scientific research and medical research. And the beauty of it is you can go right on there and search cannabis psychosis, and boom, it'll just throw, you know, tons of articles out. Our website is a little easier to use, but nonetheless, that data is out there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't do their own homework. They just repeat what somebody told them as gospel. I mean, you really need to dive in and check it out yourself.
Sure.
And verify some of this stuff.
Well, and for all the people that are parents and grandparents who think that it's harmless and it's just a little phase and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I mean, I know someone very well who is not a marijuana user, never was, who didn't, you know, when their adult son decided, you know, they were gonna smoke pot, and I don't know, it wasn't a big thing. He was employed, making good money, doing really well, but he was using marijuana, and got to a point where he was going to jump off of a building in Los Angeles, like not in Redding, where I think our tallest building is 3 floors. It was a real building, a big building, and had a psychotic episode. That was a major wake-up call, and they would never, because I used to say, you know, hey, I don't think this is a good idea. Well, you know, he's an adult. He can do what he wants. But I don't think they were properly afraid of what it would do. I think that's one thing we can do for our friends and family is scare the hell out of them.
Yeah, because there's plenty of parents out there that have kids that did jump off the building.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sad.
Right. We have been, you know, massively, massively overwhelmed by pro-pot literature, by pro-pot marketing, and, you know, it's not even, and you live this every day out there. So I think the point is, you know, it'd be nice to try to even the score a little bit, And I think the way you do that is through education.
I think so, too. I totally agree.
Yeah, you're not going to outspend them. I mean, there's just too much money behind this movement.
The other thing, the other factor that we sort of touched on but didn't really pound home is really, really pay attention to where the funding for things in your community is originating.
Right.
You know, we have, we had a group of people who wanted to do a patriotic set of film. Yeah, I don't know if you're films or videos or whatever you call it, but a little series. They were going to do this series, and they had $20,000 at the forefront that came from someone in the community that runs a supply house for growing tools. And, yeah, okay, so maybe people do grow tomatoes, but it's a lot of marijuana. You know, it's a lot of marijuana stuff. If you're going to do marijuana grows, you'd get your stuff there. And my contention is I don't think people in the marijuana industry that are making a fortune are secret philanthropists. I don't think that's true. So when you see that money connection, that ought to be a huge red flag. And we can all do that. You don't have to be a scientist, a doctor, a marijuana expert, but you can pay attention to where the money is moving in your community and to whom.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's a real tell. And as it moves into our politics, you have to be kind of, you know, you have to really look. But people worry, you know, they ask candidates questions and they give them an answer and they go, oh, okay, that's what he said. Walk away. I'm like, you might want to look at the campaign filings, because they're all public, for where the money is flowing.
Yeah, because I don't think any money that is donated into politics comes without any strings attached. And it may not be voiced up front,
yeah,
but eventually somebody's going to come to you and ask you a favor.
Well, why would the marijuana industry want someone on the Board of Supervisors? Because they're going to vote on whether or not there's commercial growing in the county.
Right.
That's easy.
Oh, absolutely.
It's super easy. So, and the voters decide that. You know, people blame the candidates all the time. Well, they're not electing themselves and they're not funding themselves, typically. That's happening. That's happening in a wider venue that you have a hand in.
Oh, you bet. Absolutely. So, well, I think the other piece that is so important is exactly what we're doing here today, you know, getting in front of the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so important that if they, you know that so-and-so's got a grow operation going, well, what does that do to them? What's that doing to individuals, et cetera? Super important.
It is absolutely important, and as that comes into your community, I mean, our county, just this election in June, the beginning of June, we had two candidates for sheriff. One took money from a marijuana collective. back in his first, I know he's laughing. I know you're like, no brainer, right? And the other guy, didn't. So why would a candidate for sheriff take money from a marijuana collective and then try to defend it by saying it's a legal business?
Yeah, well.
And can you believe that actually was a discussion that went on for quite some time, and people did vote for him because he told them he was going to do all sorts of things that most of it he couldn't do anyway. But, went on and on about what a great constitutional blah, blah, blah he was. But there was marijuana money, and there were more connections that came out right before the election. So there's not ever just one. You know, the marijuana industry doesn't support you just a tiny bit. They're not like, oh, he might be a nice guy. Let's throw him a bone and see what happens. No. They have picked you out. They're going to lift you up, and they're going to carry you on their shoulders.
Well, and absolutely. You know, that's, I think, why we're seeing so much difficulty of trying to get into the regular media, you know. I don't know. I think it's I'm not sure how that turns around. I think that the more that we brought facts and figures and, you know, science, maybe there was. I'm not super optimistic. Because, tell you what, it's there's a closed door and a small wall on many of the media.
Yeah. Well, movies, music, all of it, it's all part and parcel out there. But I figure every person who hears information like what you gave us today, you can't unhear that. You know?
Well, I sure hope.
Yeah, I mean, you can't unlearn those things. And, you know, we try to make it really, really easy. All of our stuff is posted online. We have a tab on our website that says POT. You can go there. You can see pictures. If you, and I tell people all the time, hey, if you don't care about the cartels being in the area, if you don't care about the chemicals, if you don't care about the people who are, you know, having psychotic episodes and shooting up schools, you know, you run through the list. Hey, maybe you care about the evil growers that are skinning and eating dogs out in their grows. Maybe you care about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no shortage of what not to like with this particular thing. We're going to have, I believe, maybe on the 7th or 14th, we're going to have somebody from one of the animal rescues up near where you've got like 5,000 greenhouses, and they just do despicable things to animals. So if you have somebody who thinks marijuana is great, doesn't want to listen to you on anything else, watch for the show about the animal rescue, and maybe that'll light their hair on fire.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do think we're the answer. We're the problem and we're the answer, right? It's kind of always how it works out. For your patients who, you know, with addiction, for those folks out there with addiction who are hooked on this stuff, have a recommendation besides go get some help? Is there anything more specific for those folks?
Well, the tricky part is finding treatment programs or finding, you know, treatment professionals that recognize what a problem marijuana is. I mean, you know, I've argued with a number of psychiatrists and social workers, oh, it's not that big a deal.
Oh.
And so that is the single first choice, is know where you're going and or that they understand the effects of marijuana. And from there, then obviously try to find a good therapist or a good AANA group or, you know, one that will address it as the problem that it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't realize that was, God. So if somebody goes in and says, you know, my life is messed up, I need some help. Oh, you just smoke marijuana? That's not that big a deal. I mean, do they really, is that actually
a
thing?
Yes, they do that. Oh,
no. Come on.
You must have an intrinsic depressive disorder. No, smoke pot and I get more depressed and, you know, I feel like killing myself. No, you must have a metabolic depressive disorder. It's like, wakes up.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Pull the pin.
And I have had some terrible arguments with mental health folks. Oh, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
It's so much worse they can use. It's like, well.
Not really.
I don't know.
Well, they'll get to those things later, I guess. Dr. Eric Voth, thank you for spending your time with us today. We hope everybody zooms to the archives and downloads this show and sends it to a friend. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you.
Take care.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world. For good.